Right now is the perfect time to heal your mind, body, and spirit. But for some, it may be more difficult, as there are those that have experienced unexplained phenomena, such as alien abduction and implantation. Many that have experienced this don't have anyone or anything they can turn to for help. Mainstream medical practices will not acknowledge the presence or treatment of these implants. They can be synthetic, holographic, energetic, or etheric. They can block your energy pathways in order to alter your feelings, behaviors, preferences, and limit your potential. Karen Holton has created the Quantum Health Transformation Program and the Alien Implant Remedy. The Alien Implant Remedy is a proprietary blend of essential oils, crystal frequencies, orgone energy, and guided meditation designed to work together to move energy and dissolve the implants. Due to current conditions, supply is limited, so check them out today. These kits provide the right combination of energetic frequencies specifically designed to disable and dissolve energetic implants that may be holding you back. Karen Holton also offers energy and wellness coaching, ascension workshops, Zendome's orgone generators, and spiritual support. Visit KarenHoltonHealthCoach.com or click the link in the description to find out more and get your alien implant remedy today. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight I want to welcome Lorian Fenton. She became actively involved in the San Francisco Bay Area UFO community after almost dying from a mysterious form of pneumonia during the H1N1 scare of summer of 2009. It was that near-death experience which propelled her into doing the work she loves in a community that she has been passionate about her entire life. Currently, she is the Marin Sonoma MUFON Section Director. On the weekend of September 22nd and 23rd of 2011, what she calls her second awakening took place in Los Angeles when she met several super soldiers. That weekend's experiences catapulted her into a battle against an evil force that she now believes are the masters of our planet, and they may not be human. She produces UFOCon, held annually in February and March in the San Francisco Bay Area, and currently has two live radio shows, The Fenton Perspective on Revolution Radio and The Fenton Files on KCOR. Lorian, welcome. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, been looking forward tonight. We're going to have some fun. We're going to go tunneling through some of those rabbit holes that go so deep that some people never even find their way back out. But hell, we're going to go there anyway. And usually my shows focus mainly on one topic that's connected to everything else in some other way. But tonight we're going to discuss not only your personal experiences, but our current developing dystopia, the state of ufology, some paranormal phenomenon, psychic abilities, consciousness, ET contact, angelic beings, and even super soldiers in the secret space program. And then we'll see where that takes us.
First, I don't know. We're going to need a couple days to get through all of this, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of stuff, but we're going to have some fun. So let's start first, I thought, with what got you, it was a near-death experience that really got you propelled into this, right?
Well, yes and no. That episode in 2009 was a huge catalyst. I was born probably pretty psychic and probably a contactee of some sort. But I don't know because my father and my grandmother used to see UFOs, and I didn't even think about it much until I was a teenager. I thought, well, if they're seeing UFOs, I wonder if there's something more interesting going on with them, And but I didn't really think much about it. But what really did change my life were two very important episodes. And if you don't mind, I'm going to go into those first, and then that'll get us to 2009. But I think it's important people understand about
Yeah,
these
sure.
two incidences that were really important to me. When I was 18 months old, my parents took myself, my mother, my grandmother, I mean, my mom, dad, and my grandmother took me to the beach. And it was basically they were taking themselves to the beach because they wanted to get a break from my, screaming all day long. But anyhow, so they were at the beach and they went rented a cabin. And the people who had the cabin said, there's a big note on the table, apparently. I couldn't read. I was only 18 months old, but it said there's rat poisoning every, rat poison laid out everywhere. We know you have an 18-month-old. Be sure to walk around the premise before you let her on the floor and pick it all up. And they told them where they all were. Okay, so they picked up all the rat poisoning they thought, and then my father went to make a fire. And in the old days, back when I was a baby, they used to keep firewood under staircases. You'd like open the closet door, and there'd be firewood. It'd be like a storage area for firewood. And he left it open while he was getting the firewood in and out. And apparently, there was a pie pan full of rat poison in the closet. Under kind of tucked under the wood, and of course I'm crawling around. I crawl into the closet, and of course find it, and I start chowing down like there's no tomorrow because rat poisoning back then was it looked like sugar, and it tasted just like sugar
Oh,
because
wow.
yeah, warfarin is very sweet, and so I thought it was just great fun. I'm eating away, and my father finds me and pulls the tin out, and oh my God, then I guess all hell broke loose. My mother says, oh, let's rinse her mouth out, and they're doing all that, and my mom says, do you think she's okay? I think she's okay. And my dad looks at my grandma, and my grandmother goes, hell no, and she grabs me, my mom, my dad, throws us back in, I think it was her car that they went down in, and they drive back to Portland, Oregon. They were at the Oregon coast at the time, and by the time they got there, I know this is going to sound really gross, folks, but just bear with me because it's the truth. Apparently, my blood was starting to seep through my veins, and I was turning kind of like I looked like I was bruised all over. I don't know if anybody out there has ever had any type of blood thinner given to them in the hospital or anything, but usually at the injection sites, you're all bruised up because the blood gets really thin there. So that's what was happening to me, and I was a little baby, so it was pretty bad. I mean, they got me to the hospital. They made me throw up. They did all kinds of things to me, whatever they do to you, to put charcoal down me. I don't know what the heck they did. I think they were giving me, trying to give me a blood transfusion, but I don't think it was going to work because my blood was too thin. There's all kinds of things going on. Apparently, they've decided to just let me sit for the rest of the night. I think this was about 2 o'clock in the morning. That's what my grandmother told me, in telling of the story. It was about 2 a.m. My parents decided to run home and get some clothes or something for me or whatever, and they said, "Don't fall asleep if because they said she's probably not going to make it through the night." And they said, "If anything happens, we want you holding her." And my grandmother said, "Sure, no problem," and whatever, they left. My grandmother said that she's sitting there watching me for about 10 or 15 minutes and she started to fall asleep and she felt really bad about it, but she started to doze off. And then she woke up, she half woke up and she saw what she thought was the angel that came to her when she was 13 years old and she was dying of the virus flu thing that the Spanish flu that was going around back then in the, was that
Yeah.
1918? She was like 12 or 13 at the time, and she was almost dead. And this angel came through the window at their farmhouse and hovered at the foot of the bed, or was a bright light and said, "You've got work to do, you've got things to do, you're not going to die," and gave her kind of a pep talk. And the next thing she knows, it's 12 hours later, she's recovered and family in the surrounding area. Anyhow, so she sees the same angel over my crib, and the angel tells her she's got work to do, you know, and, you know, that I'm not going anywhere, apparently. And she knew I would be fine, and she fell asleep. So my parents get back, and they find my grandmother asleep. I guess my dad is just screaming, you know, at the top of his lungs, why'd you fall asleep? She could have died and all alone, you know, that kind of thing, whatever. And I was just, you know, later when they told me the story, I'm laughing because my grandmother's just like me. She was like, she's going to be fine. I knew it, you know. You know, we're pretty blasé in my family when it comes to angels and ghosts and things like that, because both my grandmothers were very psychic. And so when they told my mom and dad, when she told my mom and dad, they were like, oh, they were so mad at her for months. I don't think my mom talked to her for a year after that. Anyhow.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So I think that was the first time that I, as a baby, not knowing what was happening, got a gift from, you know, whatever I call my gift from God. Because at that point, I became extremely psychic. And it just gets weirder from there. So I'm moving on. I'm about 6 or 7 years old. And my grandparents, we live on a small farm outside of Portland, Oregon, near Tigard, Oregon, if anybody knows where that is. And we had about, oh, I think 8 or 10 acres. And my grandfather raised sheep, and we had donkeys and goats and all kinds of fun stuff, turkeys and chickens and you name it, we had it. And one year it was the Multnomah County Fair, and I don't think I'd ever been to one before. I think I was 5 or 6 at the time, probably 6 is what we think. And my little sister was only about 2. She was just walking, and my grandparents decided to take the two of us to the state fair. I mean the county fair. So we go off to the county fair with them, and my grandfather, of course, he wants to check out the sheep and, you know, whatever. He's going to buy some new livestock. And back then, I got to say, it's probably 1963. And the only thing that there were at state fairs at that time, or county fairs, were 4-H animals, big Ferris wheels, cotton candy, dancing, and a country band. That's it. So it's very different nowadays, folks. I mean, there was nothing there but animals, and it was really, really cool, you know? And so we finally got around to the rabbit area, and I fell in love. I saw all these rabbits, and I was just like, oh my God, I love, you know, suddenly I'd seen rabbits for the first time, like I'd never seen it before. And I fell in love with this rabbit that was a prize winning rabbit, and the brother and sister team who raised the rabbit let me hold it. They said, oh yeah, you can hold it. So I sat on the ground there in the, they, back then they put shaved wood all over the ground in the whole area. So I'm sitting in these shavings and I'm holding this rabbit, and I sit in there for about an hour, you know, must be at least 45 minutes at least. Cause my grandfather was gone for a long time. My grandmother had taken my sister off somewhere else, and they'd gotten cotton candy, I think, or whatever. And it was quite a long time. And I was talking to the rabbit, and the rabbit was talking to me, you know, I thought it was talking to me. Whatever. Anyway, I'm sitting there playing with this rabbit, and then they show up and they say, it's time to go. And I said, I want the rabbit. I got to have the rabbit. And they're like, no, you can't have the rabbit. Then my grandfather goes over and talks to the young brother and sister and says, I think they were 12 or 13, says, would you sell him? They said, no, we can't, because he's a, you know, he's first place winner. We're going to keep him for breeding, whatever. And he says, comes back to me and says, give him back the rabbit. We're not taking the rabbit home. And I said, and he goes, I'm not building a hutch. I'll never forget that. I'm not building a hutch. And I was really upset, and I gave him the rabbit, and oh God, my heart broke, and I was just dying. I, you know, it was like my first loss of love of anything in my life. Right. So we get in the car. Now, back in those days, folks, there were no baby seats or, you know, car seats where kids had to get strapped in like they're going to Mars. I can't believe it nowadays. You know, you guys are missing all that. I'm going on a sidetrack here. You guys are missing all the fun.
Is that right?
Of beating up your brothers and sisters and pushing them around and, you know, whatever. And we had a blast back then, and it was so much fun. And I got to tell you, this whole thing of being strapped in and not being able to reach each other just doesn't work for me, but whatever. Anyhow, so back then we're in a Ford sedan, and they had bucket seats in the front, and back then you could, you know, hang over the front and slide back and forth between, you know, whoever was in the front seat. So of course that's what I slide over to my grandmother. I go, I really want a rabbit, grandma. Tell grandpa I want the rabbit. And then I'd slide over to grandpa, and he'd I say, I really want a rabbit, Grandpa. Please build me a hutch. You know, I really want a rabbit. And he's like, no. And then every time I'd slide back and forth, one of them would say, no, 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 no. It was just like, it was horrible. So about a half a mile to the house. And I'll never forget this because now, you know, it really sinks home now what I did. I did not understand what I was doing at the time. And I didn't understand it till I was over 50 years old. So there, that tells you how profound and how interesting this whole manifestation thing can be. I got in the middle of the two of them and I put my hands together. I had just started first grade. So that's how we kind of knew I was 6 years old. Yeah, that's right. And I did just what the nuns had taught me because I went to Catholic school. I put my hands together perfectly and I put my elbows on the seat and I hung there and I prayed to God. I said, dear God, please, I want a rabbit. I want a rabbit so bad. I love rabbits. And I'm saying this prayer, right? And I stop about, you know, a block before our house and I just give up. I'm like, done. I'm spent. I can't do it anymore. I'm done with the rabbit thing. But during that little prayer, I felt something in me that I didn't feel again until I was much older. And that was like I was having a direct communication with something else. People might call it channeling now. People might call it getting a download. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I felt something that is not what normal humans feel all the time, I'm sure. Maybe it's a kundalini thing, I don't know. But I felt this energy run through my body and out the top of my head while I was praying. Now, as a kid, I just thought that was something that happens when you pray. I didn't know that that was weird. And it only happened a few times when I prayed, so over the years. So I never really thought much about it. But sure enough, we pull into the driveway. And back then, and I, well, most people know this even today, most farms have a gate, you know, running across the front, keeping, you know, the fields, where the fields connect, where the fencing is, they have a gate to keep the animals out in case they escape out of the fencing, right, off the road. And we pull up and there's this black fuzzy thing in the middle of the driveway, and my grandfather opens the gate and there is an exact replica, same, you know, same rabbit, the same species, everything, ears, same size, a male, everything, just like the rabbit we left at Multnomah County Fair that I was holding on to. And it was just sitting there waiting for us.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, I know. Crazy. I know. It's really, it was, and today I'm very thankful that happened, because if that hadn't happened when I turned 53, what happened to me in 2009 wouldn't have been nearly as easy to grasp. So that happened. And what happened because of that is my grandmother's looking at me. She's giving me this weird look. And I finally realized later, she's very psychic. She can do things like this too, but never talks about it or anything to us. And she just knew I had the gift at that point, because it's like, here I'm manifesting rabbits out of, you know, out of my hat, as they say. So, right. So I'm, you know, this rabbit appears and my grandfather does build the hutch. And 3 months later, and here's the interesting part of it. 3 months later, two kids, a brother and a sister, just like about the same age as the kids who had the rabbit at the Multnomah County Fair, are walking by our house, our driveway one day. We lived next door to my grandparents. Okay. So we had a separate driveway and it was a little shallower to the road. People could see into what we were had back there. And these two kids are walking by. I'd never seen them before. And they said, oh, we live up the hill. Oh, you have a rabbit hutch. Can we see your rabbit? And I said, yeah, sure. And so I just put it away. And I was playing with it. And they said, can we see it? I said, sure. So I handed it to them. They go, oh, my God, that's our rabbit. We lost it, you know, about 3 months ago. And I was like, I said, okay, guess what? You can have it back. And they just took it and they went home and took the rabbit. I was done. I was, you know, done with rabbits by then.
Right.
So, but it was really interesting that, you know, and I look back on it and this correlates with everything that has happened to me since then, because I'm ending up, I know everybody goes, oh, she's the UFO lady. She's a super soldier lady. She's the mind control lady. She's the JFK lady, you know, 'cause I've got my feet in everything, right? And I live what I call like a four ring circus of paranormal extravaganza. So, people just go, what is it? Yeah, so that's my life. But guess where I'm really ending up now? I'm ending up at time travel. Time travel is becoming my whole, like, maybe that's how that rabbit got there. Maybe I went back in time, took the rabbit out of the hutch of those kids who lived down the street, and put it in the driveway so that when I was 53 years old, I would be doing what I'm doing now.
That's a very compelling thought. Very interesting.
Yeah. So I just, because everything that's happening around me right now in the last couple of years, even my last downloads, I have these amazing downloads every once in a while. They're not often, you're not like every day, I'm not channeling, talking to, you know, whatever, but every once in a while I get these profoundly amazing downloads. And the last one was a series of three. I guess I'll talk about that now because it's kind of separate from everything else. The first one, and it only happens to me when I'm half awake. I can't explain it to people. It's always half awake coming awake. It's never half awake going to sleep, okay? And what happens is my upper body will start tingling or vibrating, and it feels like, and the only way I've been able to describe it to people is it feels like little bees buzzing in my bones, and my bones are humming. And it's from the inside out. It's not like it's from the skin deep, the vibration. It's really from my bones outward. I'm still trying to find somebody else. I've only found two other people that even know what I'm experiencing in all these years, but I keep asking. So if anybody out there is having that kind of feeling when you're having contact or visions or when you pray or anything, please let me know. You can get a hold of me through my website, which is lorianfenton.com. It's just my name. And there's a contact me page there, and just hit that button and send it off to me and let me know, because I really love to talk to you about it. I'm still trying to figure out what it is. So anyhow, so I'm starting to awaken one day about, oh man, it's been almost a year and a half, a little longer, maybe almost 2 years now. And I get this vision flying at me like a full-blown movie, and it's of a big spider web, and it's just flying at me, and it stops right in front of my face. And then I realize that all of the little lines in connecting the spider web together, all the little strands, they all have words written on them, and they're tiny and they're three-dimensional, and they say conspiracy, they say JFK, they say time travel, they say God, they say consciousness, they say UFOs, aliens, Plajarans, you know, everything. It's like the whole dictionary of everything paranormal is within the spider web. And then the little strands all start twisting, and then as they twist, the words all turn into symbolism, and then they all kind of spin together really fast, and they make a circle in the middle red, and it's glowing, and it's beautiful, and I'm getting a feeling of love from it. And it says, I hear this voice in my head say, love is it, or love is something, love is all. I think it was love is all. And then the vision goes away, and I'm thinking, well, that's great. Thanks a lot. That did me a lot of good. And that didn't pay the rent. I'm always talking to my, whoever's out there that's keeping tabs of me. I'm always talking to them like, well, what do you mean I got to go to work? You know, why don't you get down here and fix this planet so we don't have to go to work anymore? You know, I'm always like negotiating with them. Like, come on, you know, you can do it. You know? Anyhow, so right. The next one happens about 2 weeks later, and I'm laying there, and the spider web comes at me again, and all the words twist. And this time, when the red dot in the middle starts spinning around, it turns into, the whole thing turns into a torrid, and it says that the first one is love is all, and the second one said love is the key. Love is the key. And I'm going, okay, great. Well, that didn't do me any good. But now the spider web's progressing into different shapes and different things. And then the final one was about a month later. Same thing happens again. The spider web comes in, and now it's turning into a torrid. And then I see that the torrid changes shape into this like sock, and I see stars in it, and I see it unfolding upon itself. And it's like it's opening to the universe, but it's pulling back in on itself in this weird figure eight kind into a torrid and then back into the, and it's spinning really fast and it turns bright orange and purple and all these colors. And then it just stops. And then I hear this voice in my head and it says, time travel is the answer. And I'm like, oh God, that's so crazy. And I wake up, that one woke me up because I was like, okay, I got to go figure out what the heck this is doing. And in that moment, I decided I was going to put on my first time travel conference. It was kind of like, well, if they're telling me time travel is the answer, maybe I should do something about this and go find some experts and put together an event. So, because that's kind of how all my events happen, as you'll hear as we go on here. And, so I'm sitting in front of the computer and I thought, well, who's an expert in time travel that I could get to speak at my conference? And I pop up and sure enough, within it's 9 a.m. where I'm at and it was 6 a.m. when it was posted. There was a professor at Harvard who came up just posted that as a three-dimensional picture.
Lauren, you broke up there for a minute. About 5 seconds or so.
Oh, okay. I just want to be sure. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Great. Okay. Well, anyhow, so there was a article posted, I think it was the AP, that a professor had come up with what a three-dimensional picture of what time travel would look like, and sure enough it looked just like the ending of my vision. So I was like, what the heck is going on here? Yeah, it was so bizarre. I mean, you know, maybe I'm picking up on what he was doing, but it's like they take these pieces, they throw them at me, and they can and add on to them. Is, you know, would they have known 2 months previous that he was drawing that picture and going to make it, you know, part of, you know, my vision? You know, I don't know, but it was very cool. And I loved it. And I thought, well, you know, if time travel is the answer, I better start pursuing it. So I put on my first time travel conference a couple years ago. And it was fascinating. It was really fascinating. So that's what's lead me up to doing my next one, which is going to be this Saturday. So if you don't mind, I'm going to plug it because it's going to be so cool. I'm so excited about it. I've got Preston Dennett. I've got Simeon Hine, who's a scientist around that kind of thing. And Marshall Barnes, who is probably the world's authority right now on time travel. I really believe that. And I've got Tim Schultz, who's written books on time travel. I've got Jerry Wills, who's traveled through a portal in South America. And he's going to talk about how crazy that was and how time bended for him. And I got Preston Dennett, who's going to talk about all the UFO encounters and contacts that have. Have you heard these strange stories where people are like, I was driving the car, and the next thing I know, I'm 2 hours early to an appointment in a town that's 150 miles away.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. He's going to talk about all the people he's interviewed that have had the most bizarre time travel slips happen. And he says he's really thankful I've got him doing this, because he goes, I think I'm going to write a book about this now. I go, great, you should, because we really need to get this out there so people know that these kind of things happen. I think that when they take us, their sense of time is not anything like ours, if they even have one.
Right.
So they screw up a lot. And I love the story. Do you remember the story about the guy who was on the couch drinking an iced tea, and they put him back as he was taking the iced tea out of the refrigerator and coming back to the living room before he got taken?
No.
And he saw himself being taken?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Oh my God, that's a wild story. I hope Preston talks about that one on Saturday. It's very cool. Anyhow, so if you want to find out more about Time Travel Con, not to, you know, go on and on about it, but timetravelcon.com is the website, and all the speakers are up there. The tickets are $25, and I've decided to keep them $25 all the way till Saturday. If you do end up showing up on the day of the conference, they'll be $30. And so there we go. Anyhow, cool. So it's going to be a great conference, and I'm very excited about it. And we're going to do commercials, and it's going to be great. And I got all kinds of fun people showing up.
Yeah,
I've got
that
people that
awesome.
just want to show up to say hi, you know. So it'll be really cool.
Yeah,
so
very
there
cool.
You go. So that's kind of that's kind of the beginnings of my whole life. I mean, it gets much more crazy after that. Trust me. I mean, I've got stories that people go, Lorraine, God, your book, you've got to get your book out. I've got stories where I blew dope smoke on a troll doll and saw a car accident happening. I knew we were all going to die. So I wouldn't let anybody do anything until we all put seatbelts on. And then let's see what else I saw. I've had a voice in my head tell me to slow down and pull over in my car several times, and both times everybody died around me. I mean, it just goes on and on. My boyfriend killed himself when I was about 20? Yeah, 20 or 21. And I was talking to him after he died. I didn't know he was dead. He was in that, just like the movie Sixth Sense.
Right.
It was crazy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow. Yeah, I mean, that's just a slice of my existence. I mean,
now,
all the other stuff.
You know, it seems some people are, you know, it's more connected to this. It's easier for them to see through to the other side of the spectrum and connect to this. I think everyone has the ability, but some people, it just comes a lot easier. And the more I look into, you know, the psychic phenomenon and how it's connected to, say, ET contact and even the paranormal, it's all connected together.
Absolutely.
When did you kind of start making the connections to, say, extraterrestrial contact or interdimensional contact with some of your psychic experiences?
I was 16 when that happened. I was 13 when I kind of thought that there might be something, but I was 16 when it happened for me. I was in a bookstore and I grabbed communion off the shelf and I took a look at it and I went, oh my God, I think I've seen this before. And then I was like, but I haven't. Have I seen that? And I kept talking myself out of it, you know? And then I realized years later, a couple years later, I was going, yeah, that was the day I knew in my heart that it's all connected. And there's a funny saying in the UFO community amongst all the contactees and the abductees and anybody who doesn't want to be taken, is that which came first, the psychic or the UFO? Because we think that once you've had UFO contact with an alien being or contact with a UFO where your consciousness is being probed by the aliens in the ship, there's many ways to make contact, right? So we're just of the ilk nowadays that if you've been probed by them, if you've been on a ship with them, if you've been on a out-of-body experience with them, if you've had a near-death experience, you're right up there at the top of the list for being psychic. Everybody who's had a near-death experience comes out of it with just amazing abilities. And I truly believe that's what happened to me when I was 18 months old. I probably was dying or died, and this angel brought me back to life, is my theory. And I've had a couple of close calls since then, and it just keeps enhancing the psychic ability. So I'm pretty sure that's what's going on with that. But I'll tell you this, if the aliens pick you up, there's a new theory I have, and I'm writing that in my book. The one I'm actually working on right now and trying to get finished is called Angels Are Aliens Too. And it's about the fact that once you've been touched by an angel or touched by an alien or contacted by an alien, you are not a human with a lowercase h anymore. And I explain what an uppercase h human is in the book. And basically my theory on this is that they have changed some type of frequency, protein structure, the way your neurons fire in your brain, or they change the chemical structure of how your endocrine system works with your pituitary gland and your pineal gland. There's something they do to you in their time space that makes you a little different when you get back to ours. You're not put back, you know, I tell everybody, here's the funny part. I always say, well, look at it like this. When I'm given a presentation, I show a picture of the Star Trek, the transporter. And they turn into little star seeds and then they disappear and then they get put back together. Well, just think of yourself, you know, you take off, you're being pulled up into a ship. Maybe you're going physically, maybe you're going, your molecules are going, who knows how it's happening. But once they put you back together here or put your physical body back in this time space, you've been enhanced. Maybe there's a few extra, those little sparkly things. you know, floating around in your DNA. Once that's happened, you're never the same, and you can't go back. There's no going back. You talk to anybody that's been a contactee, an abductee, talk to any of them, and they will all tell you the same thing. They all say, I can't go back. I can't be stupid anymore. I'm aware of everything around me now. I can read people's minds. It's like, and if you grow up doing it, you don't really realize that other people can't do it. That's the one good thing I got to thank God for every day, is that I grew up with this ability, so it didn't get, you know, pounced on me at 16 or 25 or 30 or 40. And I didn't wake up one day going, oh my God, what's going on? You know, the world isn't what I thought it was. And you ask every contactee, you can write down to, you know, the last one I interviewed, they say the same thing. They say, I am not the same person I was before they took me.
Now, so, when it comes to the abduction phenomenon, they have different schools of thoughts. They have, you know, the old school nuts and bolts researchers that believe these beings are probably coming from different galaxies and in the ships, and they're traveling at, you know, however they're doing it, they're traveling in their spaceships. And then they have these, the school of thought where there's this ultra-terrestrial spectrum where they're always around. They're just in different dimensions, and they can appear at any time. Or is it both? And I'm just wondering, what's your thoughts on this?
Do they travel from
different galaxies? Are they coming from different planets? And are there also ones that are still tinkering with us and doing these abductions that are from different, dimensions or you know, different spectrums of reality?
Yeah, it's actually three. I call it the three-level chessboard. The top level is the guys that come from another galaxy. There's very few of them. It's very hard to get here and be in a big ship and run around like that. It's very hard. It's not as easy as everybody wants to make it out to be. And I've talked to so many scientists about this. I have friends. I say they're friends in low places. Got a lot of them. And these guys, man, some of them are some of the most amazing scientists that have worked for these black ops projects. And they tell me, Lorian, it's a lot harder than you think. So the few that do get here, you know, we're lucky to realize what's going on with them. And very seldom do we ever get their ships or access to or what have you. The next level is the ones that are interdimensional. Now, their ships are slightly different than the ones out in the galaxy. The ones out in the galaxies, I would say, are mostly ship material like metals and what have you, with a slight bit of organics built in to help them run the ship better, so they're interfaced with it. Whereas the ships the Grays are driving, those are actually more of a fungus, and they can be manipulated into anything they want them to be because they have a hive mind, and they, as a group, they're holding that consciousness thought of what the ship structure is amongst all their brains together, and that's how it forms what it is, and it's more organic. And it's mixed with some metallic type of material, but it's a material we don't understand.
Yeah, I've heard of that. A lot of abductees report some kind of living fungus type of walls inside the ship.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's not like it's a fungus. What's weird is that people touch it and they describe it as, it feels like a frog's belly. That's how David Adair described his contact with the alien power plant that he was taken to at Area 51. There's other people who have touched it and said it just feels cold, but it also feels like it's holding back. It's holding you. It's like a little suction tentacles in it or something that can hold you. Terry Lovelace told about the time that he was stuck up against a wall. And he's up against this wall and he can't break free from it. He can't get away. It's because the wall was, he said it was like it was alive and it was holding him there. So I said, are you sure it wasn't like a force pushing you? He goes, no, it was the wall holding me. And I'm like, are you kidding? He goes, no, it was alive. He goes, I swear to God, it was alive. But it was also the ship. I'm like, okay. So yeah, so on the second layer, you've got that going on. And I think that is like 80% of what, you know, if people want to say I'm on a ship, I think they're 80% interdimensional. professionals that they're dealing with that are taken in a consciousness state to a different kind of, it's not a ship, it's another whole place. It's like you're going into a consciousness dimension, right, a higher dimension, and it has to deal with out-of-body experiences and your consciousness going there. And I have a great example of that. I was really sick one day when I was about, I must have been about 18 or 19, and I'm laying in bed at my, I had a really nice room at my parents' house. I had three fish tanks. I used to raise a championship super-sized koi fish for people. I used to sell these fish for like two to $500 a piece. I mean, this is back in the day, right? Anyhow, I was a nerd. I was a weird girl. I mean, you know, I used to race cars. I was, I was just crazy. I still am a little, I would say. But anyhow, so I'm laying in bed and I'm not well. I knew I was really sick. I think I had, I think I probably had spinal meningitis. I mean, I was that sick. And my parents didn't quite understand that I was that sick because I wouldn't tell them. But I think I was on a near-death experience route at that point. And I'm laying in bed and I feel like I'm dying. I really did. I felt like my life force was just floating out of me. And suddenly, I'm pushing up out of my body and I'm looking at the back of my head. And then I twist and I turn around and look at the wall. And what happened was the wall completely went away. And this big white tunnel of swirling, amazing light starts coming at me. You know, the tunnel of death or whatever is what I thought it was. And this woman comes towards me and she's beautiful. And she's wearing this red dress and she's got long dark hair. And she starts talking to me and telling me about all the stuff I'm going to be doing. And, you know, and I don't remember it now, which really upsets me because I really wish I could remember every time something this profound has happened to me. There's so many times. Every time I get pushed, put back in my body, it's like a living hell getting put back in my body, number one. And number two, I'm mad because they won't let me remember anything except for you've got work to do. I'm like, no, don't do this to me. So anyhow, this woman had this conversation with me this for God knows how long, but I'm sitting there with my astral body sitting on top of my real body, having this conversation with the swirly tunnel in the room and the whole bits going on around me. And then I remember diving back into my body because I realized I'd been out of it so long that I was probably nearing death. And she had said something about you better get back in your body. I kind of remember that. So I got back in my body, the wall closed down to a room again. And that was the end of that experience. So that's another type of experience. So you're looking at two or three different types, and she could have been an alien. She could have been an angel. She could have been an ascended master. I mean, I have no idea who she was, but she was amazing. The love coming off of her was truly fantastic. And another time, I'm not going to tell the story tonight, but another time an angel was by the bed and I got propelled to this place of love and light that was so extraordinary that I can't even describe it. And if other people have had it happen, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's so amazing that there's no words to describe this love. It has nothing to do with human love at all. It's so far beyond that. It's amazing. So don't fear death, you guys, because I've been there and it is so beautiful. You know, I talk to Danny and Brinkley about this every once in a while, and we're probably two of the most happy people on the planet because we both have been there and we're like, hey, yeah, it's no big deal. I can't wait to go, you know. That's what happens to people who have had those near-death experiences or extraordinary experiences with angels or aliens or whatever. You'll find that as a group, they did the study with Free. Do you know about the study?
I've heard of it. I'm familiar. Yes.
Yeah. Well, in that study, they asked people, all these contactees and everything, are you afraid to die? And 99% of them said, no, I'm ready to go. You know, because they've all been pretty much, you know, enlightened to the point where they realize there's other dimensions. They're not fearful because they know they're there. Right. So
Now
that,
they had,
that's the one beautiful thing about it. So anyhow, I'll leave that story alone now. So,
well, now they have the other aspect of this phenomenon, which is the abduction, the strange hybrid programs, the taking of eggs and sperm, the sometimes seemingly terrifying experiences where you encounter reptilian creatures or insect creatures. Now, these are these the ones that are you think are coming from different planets? Are these interdimensional as well?
I think it's the same chessboard. I think you've got three levels of them as well. And what I tell people all the time, and hopefully I can draw this on the cover of my book, is I'm drawing three level chessboard, and one's dark and one's light, like a yin yang. And we're getting, take that and work with it, because literally you've got six levels going on at the same time, and you've got different people from different sides abducting and handling each other, and it's turning into quite the menagerie of crazy. That's all I can describe it to people, because you've got the military, the good guys in the military over on the white side going, well, you know, we've got to try to do disclosure. We've got to do whatever. There's very few of them, by the way. And then you go over to the dark side and you got the same thing. You got the reptilians on the top level, and they're probably coming interdimensionally and in ships. And then you've got the out-of-body experience, like archons that will, you know, like my, I've had a couple of encounters with these evil archonic beings in out-of-body experiences. I mean, there's so many levels of that too. And plus, don't forget, you got the military on both sides. You got the good guys on the military side, and you got the bad guys on the military side, and they're abducting people too. They've been doing it since the early 50s.
Right. I'm glad you got into the military, because I want to get into super soldiers now.
Oh boy.
Now, for me, super soldiers, I am completely on the fence about this. I've had quite a few people that have claimed to be super soldiers, like Randy Kramer, Tony Rodriguez, Anthony Zender. I think I've had another one. Now, their stories, I can tell that they completely believe their stories.
Exactly.
I can tell by the way they recall them, the way they tell it, that they believe their stories, and it's very compelling. And some of the things that they're saying is so unbelievable that it immediately just shuts people off, and they're like, no, that's impossible. So you work a lot with super soldiers. You have your super soldier conference. What are your thoughts on this super soldier phenomenon?
Well, now that I've been at it for over a decade now with the super soldiers, I have realized that there's many levels to that as well. And that's the problem. When I first got into it, I thought it was pretty cut and dry, because my first introduction was people like Duncan O'Finian and that crowd. Okay.
Right.
And I believe there was, and there still is, a military program where they're actually enhancing people and using their consciousness in a psychic remote viewing aspect to deal with aliens, to deal with other military people, you know, deal with the Russians. You know, I don't know what they're dealing with, but I absolutely believe that. I also believe at the same time they're creating a whole bunch of Manchurian candidate type mind controlled people that are usually ex-military or currently military, that they use to do all of the shootings and the psyops things going on in the States. And then that leads you down another corridor, if you want, an offshoot of this whole super soldier program, where they're using targeted individuals. You know, these people call themselves targeted individuals because they're being harassed by the government, or people are gang stalking them, or they're doing they're microwaving them, or they're putting voice to skull communication in their heads. And I think that's an offshoot of the military program, where they're working with certain guys that they can mind control to the point where they'll do anything they tell them to do. on a whim, just like drop of a hat, they're there, they'll do it. And this is how they're dealing with the public around it, because they've got us mind controlled in the public. Now, I'm going to go into something I don't usually talk about too much, but because of the coronavirus and everything that's going on right now, this is really important and people need to understand this. They've been working with cell phone frequencies and television frequencies, computer frequencies, for a very long time now. They knew that back in 1960 something, that they could use that kind of flicker rate to control people. So you got to realize CIA has been in Hollywood since, gosh, the 40s, late after the war. They started infiltrating Hollywood. Right. They've been, you know, obviously infiltrating everybody they can in any, you know, radio station, TV network. It's completely controlled. We have Mockingbird as a prime example. And they've been doing their mind control projects, and they've been doing them for a long time with very nefarious people. And I'm going to put all that into my book too. But the bottom line here is, people need to understand that these people that are saying these crazy stories, it's just like, what's the best way to explain it? Okay, I'm trying to go three places at once, and I'm going to start with one. Let's take a regular military guy that, let's take the guy who shot up the naval yard. I can't remember. Aaron Alexis, was that his name?
Not sure. I know who you're talking about, though.
Yeah, he shot up the naval yard. 2 weeks before he did it, he called my friend in L.A. that runs a targeted individual group and said, they're beaming a voice into my head and they're trying to get me to kill people at this base. And my friend said, please resist it. Try everything you can. Get out to L.A. I'll take care of you. We'll try to get you deprogrammed. This guy's military. He's gone through their program. He doesn't realize he's even been through the program. He's a computer programmer. They must have done it to him at some point, you know, while he was getting a flicker rate thing going. Or maybe he was under hypnosis. I don't know. It's probably all of the above. And he was the only one who put, remember he carved ELF or EMF in the electro,
right,
something about the magnetic frequencies into the butt of his gun. And yeah, when they found it after he killed himself, they were like making light and jokes of it. But it was a real big signal to all of us that have been around the mind control, the super soldiers, the targeted individuals, and all that it's all connected, that he was one of their failed programs or one of their good programs, you know, because they want to take away the guns from people in the United States, and they're going to shoot up as many people as they can, as often as they can, with these kind of people. Now, back to how these guys are created. There is a scene in the Denzel Washington remake of The Manchurian Candidate. This is your best scene to watch. You watch the very first scene in the movie, and in that scene is he's in a room, and there's a belly dancer and colored lights and all kinds of craziness going on around him. It's like he's on an acid trip, okay? And then the next thing you know, it's the end of the movie, and they take them back to this island where they were all programmed, all the crew of that one particular squadron. And that room is all white. There's a white chair in it. They're all wearing white clothes, and they've got these things attached to his head. So that is how different it is for the person being programmed as compared to the reality of what's going on around them. While you're in the program, you're seeing all the stuff, and while you're just the observer to who's experiencing the program, there's nothing there. So what they do, this is really important to remember, they'll take 75% of your thought process and your memories, and you'll see belly dancers and colored lights, and you'll tell the story, and people will think you're nuts, because the other 25% is all true. I did go to this base. I did try to do something with this person. There was a giant ant being I was killing. There was this, there was that. But then they start telling you about how their mother was having, you know, reptilian sex with the queen mother, you know, that kind of thing. And then they're gone. Cause then you're like, I can't relate to that. That guy's nuts. So then the rest right. of his story is just, you know, the 20% that's true is thrown out with the bathwater. So, and that's exactly what they do. They put all this stuff in their head. They make them sound like they're crazy people. And you got to remember, and you just got to keep saying to yourself, well, maybe you can't figure out which of the 20% is true, but it's definitely something in there's got to be true, or they wouldn't be doing what they're doing.
So the part that would be true would be that they're somehow using their consciousness, possibly off planet, to do tasks or even fight in some kind of battle.
It could be. You know, that goes back to the story of Andy Bishago when he says, you know, Andy's a really good friend of mine, and he's actually going to be speaking at my time travel conference. And I want everybody to pray for Andy. He's got some physical issues, and he's not doing so great, but he's hanging in there, and he's a good friend, and I pray for him every day. But the deal with Andy is, Andy and I have known each other a long time, and I sat him down one day after I heard his whole story for the first time, and I said, Andy, look, I love you, man, but here's the deal. you tell this story about going to Mars with your buddy and this other guy or whatever, and even Barack Obama, you know, whatever, and maybe he's there with them. I don't know. To this day, I haven't made a judgment about that, because Barack Obama is so bizarre. You know, he could have gone to Mars with Andy. I don't know. But he tells the story about how they get up on the planet, and the planet's surface, and this monster comes running at them with a kid, and is trying to kill the kid, or the kid's out in the middle of this field or rocks or whatever, and this monster comes along and tries to kill the kid. The first time they try to save him, the monster wins and eats the kid. So he says 2 weeks later, same thing, they get on Mars, the kid is there again, and the monster, they almost save it, but the monster still eats the kid, right? And then the third time, they get up there, and the kid's there again, they win, the monster gets killed, and yay, they're all excited, right? I said, Andy, doesn't that seem odd to you that you'd have to, you know, reboot three times to save the same kid? I said, it's got to be a simulation, it's got to be something they're doing
right.
to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I said, it's a form of mind control, Andy, that's got to be that. And ever since that day, he has said he is not sure how the Mars thing works. And it could be very real that they're going to Mars, but maybe when they get there, that technology is so different than ours here that they're putting them in. And here's another thing I learned, and people can believe me or not, I don't care, but I believe it now. When I first heard it, long time ago, I didn't believe it. A friend of mine told me about what the aliens are actually doing. And very few people talk about this. You know, you talk about that structure that's outside of our planet that the aliens are living in, and that it could be another dimension or whatever. Well, that was actually built by the reptilians and the grays as a place where they can interact with us. Because like I said before, when we come back from being with them, we're not quite the same, because we had to go into their space. And so what they have built is what this person told me what the aliens call the slots. That's SLOTS. And it's basically a vertical or sideways conjunct dimension of the one that surrounds our planet that they actually live in. Okay, it's kind of like a sandwich in between the two, like Earth is one side of the sandwich and their dimension's the other, and this is the lettuce and the tomato and the bacon in between. And it's like a holodeck on a Starship Enterprise. And basically they go in there and they can make you think you're on a ship. They can make you think you're not on the ship. They can make you think you're in water. They can, you know, they can do anything they want to you in there. And they can make you think you're in another time. This has to do with time too. And they can actually take you back in time in the slots. And that's where I think what happens is why they screw up putting people back into their living room 20 minutes before they took them, you know, is because they're taking you to a place that doesn't have time. And it just has another dimension of you being in it and them being in it and them doing what they will. Time doesn't exist.
These military abductions can also be confused for actual, you know, extraterrestrial abductions.
Oh, absolutely. But then remember this. You've got the whole guys over there that are doing the military abductions that have never seen an alien, and they don't interface with them. They make you think you're seeing an alien. because they can project that kind of thought process into your head. There are people in the military that I hardly ever talk about, but I'm going to talk about it today on the show, that are called remote influencers. And they can do a lot of things to people's brains. They can make you think you're seeing Jesus in front of you. Seriously, that's how good they are. And I think that a lot of them have been tuned up by the aliens, because we have had an ongoing relationship with them for many, many years. And I think that the aliens have given them some type of, you know, whether it's a pill they take or a headband they put on or whatever. And they jack up their psychic abilities to the point where they can almost do what the aliens do. And I don't think very many humans can get to that level. That's another part of the whole game. It's like, you know, you're picking up your magic sword and your potions and stuff on your level in your virtual reality game. Well, I think there's very few people who can get to the point where they can pick up that magic elixir and drink it and actually still live to see another day in this dimension. But I think we have a few of them, and I've heard rumor about some people, and I think the first person that turned me on to the first one that I heard about, and he was definitely a super soldier, was a guy named Ghost Walker. And it's all over the internet. If you guys want to look for that, look it up. Wendell Stevens and Robert O'Dean interviewed him in his backyard, Wendell's backyard, way back in the, God, it must have been the early 70s, late 70s, something like that. And you'll find it. Just put in Ghost Walker and look this guy up. Now, after he left Wendell's house, he went to Sean David Morton's house, and then a whole saga and story began. And it's just crazy. And they were doing things to this guy where they actually turned his eyes golden colored because of the things they were putting into his body. And he said that was alien technology, like alien elixirs were going into his body. So anyhow, so there's so many levels to all this. See, this is the problem. And the question is, which story do you want to believe? And there's 5,000 stories. And what part do you pull out of each story that's absolutely the truth? What isn't? And what I tell people to do is start taking in like files of information. Listen to everybody's story, you know, and then go home and say, okay, now that part sounded pretty bizarre, so that's probably not real. But you know what? That could have been real, you know, maybe fighting an alien, you know, jumping out of the helicopter and fighting an alien, like Duncan O'Finnian said he did in Vietnam. Maybe that's real. And then what you do is you sit back and you wait until somebody else along the line, and you got to get old doing this. I swear, God, this is not an old person's game to get into. You got to be very young and really get your knowledge together. Know your history about every freaking UFO sighting, crash, or whatever you can get your hands on. And then you start pulling all the pieces of the puzzle together. Now, and it's taken me years. I mean, it's taken me years to even glean pieces of this, because it took me four people, maybe even six people, where I would actually say, okay, that's got to be real. Even though I don't want to believe it, my mind says that can't be real. But then six people who don't know each other, live in different parts of the world, different countries, come up with the same story. You got to sit back and go, okay, there's something to this.
Now, do you think there are clandestine groups on the planet that are in communication with off-planet beings or interdimensional beings?
Oh, absolutely.
That have some level of control over society?
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Trust me, humans aren't made to suffer the way we are. When you're born, the last thing on your mind is how you can take down a whole country and how you can become a communist socialist and be an anarchist and throw Molotov cocktails at somebody. You're not born like that. And you're not given the love from your mother to be like that. That's something that is built into you from the day you get in school and you're indoctrinated and you're bullied and you're this, you're that. And society is set up for that to let it all happen. And you got to ask yourself, you know, you drive by a homeless person on the street, what do? You think it's okay. You don't do anything. I drive by a homeless person in the street, I cry. I go insane. I go nuts. You know why? Because I know it doesn't have to be like this. Nobody has to be homeless. That's not even part of being a human being. We've been tortured into thinking that this is how we are. And that this is how every society has to run. Anyhow, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, if you think about the hidden technologies that we have and the possibilities with, you know, a secret space program and the healing technologies, the free energy technologies that we won't know about, that they're holding back from us, that we could have a completely different planet, you know, that's another part of it that, you know, that keeps us from finding out about it.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And it's very interesting because our society, you know, we're in an upheaval right now. That's what I was saying earlier in the show, is that we're in an upheaval right now where our society is going to change. Whether it changes in the right direction or the wrong direction, I don't know what's going to happen yet, because pure socialism isn't going to work and pure capitalism isn't going to work. What we have to do is we have to take away the ability for one person to own a company and reap the benefits of everybody working underneath him at slave wages, okay? And you can say, okay, the guy at Amazon, he's making billions of dollars. His CEOs on the next level down are making $500,000 or $1 million a year, and then it goes trickles down. But the base of the triangle is always much huger. It's the biggest, and that's where your slave labor is. And those people are never going to see what it's like to be a normal human, because they've got to live paycheck to paycheck. They got to wonder where their food's coming from. And now with the pandemic, it's really coming to light that, you know, whether you're black, green, purple, I don't care what color you are, we're all slaves in a capitalistic society that only worries about the corporation. You can have a capitalistic society, but you've just got to start making it more of a co-op situation. I like to use the example of Southwest Airlines. They're employee owned. They do have CEOs, they have directors, they have investors that probably get a little more money than the other people do at the end of the year that work on the line or in the cockpit or on the ship itself, on the ship, on the airplane itself. I can see now Southwest UFOs coming your way now. Anyhow, but yeah, so at the end of the year, these guys are getting a dividend because they own pieces of the company. It's your typical co-op situation, but everybody has to get rewarded a little bit in tiered levels, but still everybody has a piece and they take pride in it because they own it too. And I think that's really important. I think every company in the United States has to get to that point where it's not the trickle down, I got a slave mentality, like, you know, type of situation. And if we have to, and I know this is going to sound crazy and people are going to hate me for it, we may have to actually have a labor force that gets paid minimum wage, but they are going to have supplemental income or free housing or free whatever, because our society is not going to be able to change that quickly. It's going to take about 20 to 50 years for us to actually get to that point unless we have a revolution and it happens overnight.
Right. I mean, our whole system is broken, but with what's happening right now, with everything that started, especially with, you know, the coronavirus in 2020, whether you're a so-called conspiracy theorist or not, there are agendas at play. There are changes that are occurring that are going to affect the way we live our lives for the rest of our lives right now. And a lot of these agendas are not for the best human interest. Now, where
are we talking vaccines?
Well, we could be talking all kinds of things when it comes to what's going on right now. I mean, there's agendas on top of agendas on top of agendas that are being
absolutely
pushed on us right now. And our freedoms are being taken away. We're being censored. We're having less and less of a voice to try and just, you know, speak out about some of these things and open people's eyes and say, hey, this isn't right. This isn't right. And it seems like all our options are being taken away to talk about these things. So, I mean, do you see us even having a voice any times in the near future? And where do you see us going with all this nonsense that's happening?
I wish you hadn't asked me that, because I had a vision about 15, maybe it's 20 years ago now. I was about in my late 30s. Yeah, it's a long time ago. And I saw a revolution in this country, And I thought it was going to be, I thought the dates they told me were going to be 2022 to 2025, that it was going to be the biggest change. Maybe the revolution was coming in 2021 and I just didn't put it together, but 2022 to 2025 were going to be extreme changes in the United States. Extreme, like to the point of like crazy extreme. And I don't know. I mean, I'm very worried because I'm torn. I'm actually torn between both sides of this equation because, you know, I'm an NRA supporter and I'm a patriot. And
well, both sides are kind of turning each other against each other. It's
exactly
it's really sad.
And I bet Black Lives Matter and everything else matters to me too. So I'm sitting here, you know, as a patriot saying women, and I believe women should have a choice. Being a woman, I think that is, it's between her and her doctor, and government and God have nothing to do with it at that point. You know, she's got to deal with God on her own level. Okay. So I'm still a God-fearing person, but I believe in women's choice. So where does that put me? I'm kind of like all over the map,
right.
You know.
I mean, it's another agenda on top of the agenda to keep us divided and not looking at the real problems and enemies, you know?
Absolutely. Is if you're anybody like a moderate in the middle, kind of like where I probably sit, you know, I'm conservative moderate, you know, there's nothing for me. There's either the, you know, I'm a gun toting, you know, anarchist, or I'm going to be a Molotov throwing cocktail anarchist, you know, I mean, there's one side or the other and it's getting scary, you know, I mean, I don't want to wear a mask. How are you doing on the mask thing?
Well, unfortunately, if I want to go shopping where in my area, I have to. But yeah, I would burn them all if I could, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I won't wear one. And so I've been having to go to the door and open it of any building and ask for the manager. And I say, I'm sorry, you know, and I stay 6 feet away from them, of course. And I say, I'm sorry, I tested negative and I can't wear it because I've got a deviated septum and I can't breathe through my nose and I can't wear one. And my doctor told me not to wear one, but I need to go shopping. Will you let me in if I stay 6 feet away from everybody? And a few of them have let me in. And it's, they look around to make sure there's nobody really in there. And they go, oh, okay. And I'll be really fast. And they're like, oh, okay. But I can't get into Whole Foods. I can't get into Trader Joe's. I can't get into Safeway. I can't get into any big place where there's a lot of people shopping because they won't let me. I got into Dunkin' Donuts the other day. It was 5 o'clock in the morning. Nobody was in there. And I opened the door. Can I come in? And she goes, she's got a big plastic shield between me and her. And I'm standing 6 feet away from it. And she's like, oh, okay. Okay, that's as far as you can come. I said, how am I going to get you the money? Oh, and she went, oh, I don't know. And then I had to lean way over and hand the money to her. And I'm like, going, this is just so stupid.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, the future outlook, it's very iffy at this point because we have a lot of people that are waking up and seeing through the nonsense. I don't know if it's happening fast enough to where all these agendas are being pushed so fast and people are going along with it so easily. It's just, you know, it looks like a dystopia is among us, you know.
Well, as I've been barking for a long time, mind control at its finest, and that's really what it all boils down to. Because if you're not mind controlled, if you're a normal human being, the first thought you have is, I'm not wearing a mask. Why would anybody wear a mask? That's a really horrible thing to do to yourself. You can get CO2 poisoning. I mean, doctors don't wear masks unless they're in surgery and they've got oxygen pumped into the room and they change them every 2 hours, right? I mean, yeah. It's like, and if they touch it or they sneeze on it or they do anything, it's gone instantly. I mean, that's the only way you're going to have a mask work is if you're completely covered, your hands are covered, your eyes are covered, everything's covered, your hair's covered. I mean, you're just completely like, you know, I hate to say it, a big old condom wrapper around you. And you've got this mask on and you don't do anything. And if you do, you get rid of it. And people are walking around with a mask that's been laying on their desktop for, you know, a month, you know, and they're just like, oh, I guess I should wash it once in a while, right? You know. Or spray disinfectant on it or, you know, whatever. It's not going to make a bit of difference. It's not going to make any difference.
I think, just the only thing we can do right now is just keep, as long as we have our voices, just keep trying to open people's eyes to this, and start on your local levels, and start with yourself, and setting examples, and trying to make those changes in your community to let people know what, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Basically BS, you know?
Yep, absolutely. I've been thinking about running for an office here in town. I never have thought about doing that in my entire life. I just thought, well, you know, I'm too crazy. They'll find out I'm into the UFO thing, and I'll just, you know, I won't win at all. But at least I'll try, because it'll be 6 months of me campaigning about, are you a sheep? Do you realize they mind control you? You know, I'll do it on a very subtle level, because you can't go out there and just say, everybody's mind controlled, to run around with a pan and scream it, you know. But I'm definitely going to be able to get some shots in. So I'm thinking about doing that next year. I might run for like city council or something.
Yeah.
So I can open up a few eyes here and there, you know.
Yeah, more people have to, you know, have their voices heard out there. Well, tonight I want to close on something that's, it's exciting in a way, and it's kind of strange in a way, and I don't trust it in a way, but it's been happening for the past few years, this slow drip disclosure coming from the mainstream media about UFOs, the Pentagon information, the so-called exotic off-planet materials that they'll be talking about. I'd love to get your thoughts on, where do you think all this is going? Because me personally, I don't trust anything coming from our government or media that is going to be telling us about UFOs. But the question is, why now, and why are they doing this little slow drip disclosure type thing?
Well, okay, that's a lot, because there's so many things, so many moving parts to it right now. I'm going to start with To the Stars Academy, and let's start there. Back in 2015 was the first day that we saw at a conference, Tom DeLonge made a video 5 minutes long or 3 minutes long, something, you know, you wait till you see what we've got coming for you, blah, blah, blah. This was 2015. Yeah. Then 2016, we get another little video snippet that says, wait till you see, we got something so amazing, it's going to change the world, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm so excited, I can't wait till it happens, disclosure's coming, right? You know, I'm thinking good, because hey, I'm going to throw something in here. I have a 5-year plan. My 5-year plan is I don't want to end up being in UFOs the rest of my life. I want a farm. I want my goats. I want to be left alone. I want to make jewelry. I want to, you know, this isn't something I chose to do. Okay. This is something that was propelled upon me. All right. And so I always have a joke, and this is really funny. I go to the conferences and I shake the hands of the top speakers and stuff. And I look at them and I go, what's your 5-year plan to get out of this? And they all look at me and they don't know what I'm talking about. Because, you know, they're doing it for a living, right? I'm like, you know, if you're doing this for a living, you're crazy, because this is no way to make a living, right? And it's pretty cutthroat. But I won't go into the cutthroatness of conferencing today. So back to this. Then it's 2017, we get that October surprise thing where Jim Semivan and Chris Mullen and the rest of my, I can't rattle off all their names right now, but you know what I'm talking about. And Tom DeLonge standing up there, we're launching To the Stars Academy, and I'm going to tell you about, and then the first thing they say is, you know, Jim Semivan, ex-CIA, you know, Chris Mullen, ex-CIA, and all this stuff, and I start laughing hysterically, because here's the kicker, folks. If you do your homework, like I have for 15 years, 20 years on this. My good friend Melinda Leslie has been at it for 28 years trying to track these guys down. And her friend, another guy that she's working with, he's been at it for 35 years. They have been tracking, and I have been tracking, these guys who are called, and Grant Cameron's been tracking them too. He's wrote a book about them. Grant's book is pretty it's pretty good. It's not quite, you know, it's not quite right down to the nugget of everything, but between him and Melinda, I think they finally figured out all the pieces and all the players. But anyhow, long story short, this Avery or Majestic 12 or whatever you want to call it, there's a long history of craziness around all this, and those guys have been manipulating our version of disclosure since 1982 when they met at a Denny's restaurant. And it's ever since that day, they are the guys that decide what happens out here.
CIA equals propaganda.
Exactly. And these guys sitting on that stage telling you they're all retired, if you believe that, I got several bridges I can sell you. Because these guys, there is no retirement from knowing what you know. And the day the American people wake up to that, it's another whole story. Because, you know, once you've got a clearance at that level, you're never out. And there's a story I could tell about a guy at Area 51 pre-Bob Lazar that would blow your mind. But I don't have time today. But anyhow, I'm just saying, these guys getting up on that stage like, oh, this is a brand new thing and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Those are the same guys who've been involved in this whole story since 1982. Yeah, the players shuffle around a bit and they change a bit or whatever. And now they've got Lou Elizondo as the front man because the other guys are getting old. They're all in their 80s now. They had to pick newer, younger guys to get in there and start being the head honchos of what we will disclose. And let me tell you, folks, don't believe a word these guys say, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep the government informed about unidentified flying objects through their TV shows, their whatever else they do. I don't know what else they do. All I've seen is a TV show. I think they sell merchandise. I think that's about it. And they go to Congress and the evil aliens. I mean, that's basically what they're doing. And they got the money. They got the funding they needed. And now what they're going to do is they're going to get on TV and spout all this propaganda about how we need to be fearful of whatever's going on out there. But the nice part about it is, and the one good thing they're doing, is they're actually showing, like this last episode, I don't know if you saw it, where they showed all the airplane pilots that had seen all these strange UFOs and things in the sky. At least they're doing that. At least they're giving us that, because that's the truth and they can't take that away. But what they are doing is they manipulate what you think about it at the end, where they all get together and they go, ooh, this could be bad. You know, they could hit and kill everybody in the plane and. Hey, trust me. If aliens wanted to hit the plane, they'd hit the plane. They're not going to hit the plane. They could be 3 inches away from it and they'll never hit us. Because they're not going to. It's that simple. They never have. They never will, unless it's on purpose. Okay?
Right. Definitely.
So, and this whole thing, they're not even going near who's driving the alien crafts. You know, that'll be 20 years. And so what they're doing, and just to answer your question in a nutshell, instead of going off on all the tangents that go with it, what they're doing is a very slow drip. And I told Ruben this, my MUFON state director, because I'm a MUFON section director. I said, you know, this is going to be 20 years before we get to the point where they really disclose that things are happening. And then it'll be a next whole generation of kids that grow up knowing that they're out there. Okay. It's just like Childhood's End. In that movie, the aliens park in front of, on top of every big city in the world, and they wait 100 years before they even come out of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's two or three generations have died off knowing that they're just up there and they're not doing anything. So no one's afraid anymore. So, you know, that's what they're doing. They're doing the slow drip. Now, I could be wrong, and I'll tell you why I think I might be a little bit wrong on this, is because on the last episode, they started talking about UFOs instead of UAPs. So they're starting to say that. They're starting to say UFO again, and I'm thinking, I wonder why they're doing that. And maybe they're getting ready faster than I thought to start talking about the aliens and the UFOs. So there's a little bit of a change there. I thought that was interesting. And there's a movie coming out that they're very much aware of and part of, and it's called Phenomenon by James Fox.
Yes, I've heard of this one coming out.
It's going to be out in September, so we don't have much more time to wait. And there's one scene in that movie that talks about the alien spacecraft pieces, and I can't tell you guys much about it because I've seen the movie and I know what's going on with it. But once that's out, I think that's going to help them be able to move faster in their disclosure if they want to. Okay. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. My guess is it's a slow drip. It'll be 20 years before they even get anywhere really, but I may be wrong. They may be on a 5-year track and I may be just seeing it wrong.
Well, we live in fascinating times, you know.
Lori, yeah, but they can. But remember this: they control the narrative. If you're in ufology, if you're speaking at a conference, if you're doing whatever you're doing, if you've got a radio show or whatever, just forget the fact that normal people out there are paying any attention to you. They're paying attention to these guys, and these guys only, because they think we're all kind of the kooks. They still don't bring us into their shows.
Yeah,
notice that too.
I do see that the people that are awakening are starting to listen to the kooks a little more, which is promising. It is very
promising. Thank God.
You know. Well, Lorian, thank you so much. That was such awesome information, and we barely scratched the surface on anything. So we're gonna have to do a part two soon.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I'd love that. Maybe I'll go into some of my stories and all the stuff that's happened to me over the years.
Oh, definitely.
Because we were just kind of general tonight. But, yeah, I've got tons of stuff. I haven't even told you about what happened at the Super Soldier conferences.
Oh yeah,
my God. That alone's a whole show. You know?
Awesome. Well, look forward to it. Well, Lorian, thank you so much. And everyone, until next time, have an excellent evening.